Okay, I think we're set to go. So we will return to the series on unanswered prayer next Sunday. But today, I decided that there was something a bit more pressing that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to name this morning's sermon, Don't Be So Bat Droppings Crazy. Except that I did not want to use the euphemism. If there was ever a sermon that warranted raw language, this would probably be the one, but I can't really put that on the website, and so I decided to tone it down. In fact, the revised title even has a biblical reference. Will they not say that you have lost your minds? Taken from 1 Corinthians 14. Now, I have felt this sermon coming on for some time, and I actually visualized it in there, not out here, but I've been sort of suppressing it, not sure whether I wanted to pursue this or just kind of let it drop, but it kind of keeps bubbling and boiling inside me. And something actually pushed me over the edge a couple weeks ago, something I heard secondhand, not something that someone told me directly. I heard it secondhand, which was added to lots of things I've been hearing recently, secondhand, third hand, first hand, which has been added to a large pile of things I've been reading as well, like posts on Facebook and blogs and websites. And this added to one-on-one conversations, like maybe even short ones that I've had with believers, some in our church, but many with a number outside our church. Crazy things, unfounded, wacky, knee-jerk, over-the-top, not thought this through kinds of things. And some of it is just pure nuttiness. Some of it carries a tone of arrogance. I know what I am talking about, and or defiance. I don't care what others say, even those more knowledgeable on the matter. And all of it, if witnessed by unbelievers, and a lot of it is, would have to be a huge turnoff. It's troublesome enough when reckless words are spouted off from Christians to Christians, but it usually doesn't stop there. Non-Christians get a full dose of some of our craziness as well. Especially on, one, two, three, Facebook, social media. And because of this, the gospel and the name of Christ, which should be a sweet aroma, often becomes to them a bitter stench. Now, fortunately, what I'm going after this morning does not appear to be a widespread problem with our folks here. Not widespread. And so today's message is primarily a warning. I want you to process it in that way. It's not a rebuke. This is an exhortation to be careful. But it will, granted, sound like a rebuke because much of it was conceived in no small amount of irritation. And but it is really intended to be a warning. But yet a warning is called for. This because no one among us is immune from talking like a fool. And I certainly have had my share of this through the years. And because both our brains and our minds have been damaged by the fall and are prone to foolish ideas and reckless words, God, in His mercy, has dedicated a whole book in the Bible devoted to that particular problem to help us with that. And that would be what book? The book of Proverbs, which we should read quite often, like maybe a chapter a day, at least. The opportunity and the temptation to run our mouths on things we are not qualified to address and assert crazy opinions as established facts and do so with a tone of arrogance, I cannot possibly be wrong with this, and make unfounded accusations against others regarding their motives and belittle anyone who dares to differ and pass on unfounded rumors and rubbish from the internet as gospel truth that we don't even bother to check out, well, these really are temptations that we all face in this age and may be guilty of. And we just really need to be very, very careful about this. And if you perpetually give into this, well, this is an exhortation to stop it. It just has to stop. Stop it. Actions become habits. Habits become a lifestyle. And a lifestyle becomes your character. Recognize the damage this causes. Exercise some self-control and master that ugly thing. And it's an ugly thing. Do you by chance happen to recall that friendly reminder I offered a couple weeks ago in an email assuming that you're reading your emails from us, that went like this. Remember who you belong to when using social media. Filter, then filter again. How many read that, saw that? All right, good. So today I'm going to turn that into a whole sermon. And it applies to more than Facebook. Every time we communicate, verbally, emails, t-shirt slogans, bumper stickers, social media, conversations, whatever the forum may be, remember who you belong to. Remember who you represent. Remember who purchased you with the price. Think before you speak. Think before you hit that send button. Filter. Let it sit overnight. Then filter again. I had to filter this sermon. You should have seen the original draft. Or the second. Or the third. Or the fourth. This is version 27. And it still needs work. So before I get into this, I need to clarify a couple things. It would be natural to assume that I have a particular individuals in mind or particular posts on Facebook that I read. For instance, oh, he's referring to that. I know what he's talking about. Well, to speak candidly, I would say, well, maybe some. But quite frankly, it all kind of runs together. And over time, the specifics get lost. I'm not targeting any particular person or thing. In fact, I haven't even been on Facebook for some time now. The things I've seen posted and the things I've overheard people say and the things I've said to me directly, all of it together shows that there is something somewhat widespread just across the Christian culture here, something that needs attention. And secondly, in clarifications here, I'm wanting to avoid examples. But a few times I'll need to provide examples to help illustrate the point. I can't seem to avoid that as hard as I've tried. My fear in this is that any examples I might mention will then become the focal point in everyone's minds, you know, the takeaway from today. And as a result, the actual warning and exhortation will be lost. So try to appreciate that the driving exhortation itself stands on its own, regardless of whether the examples I refer to accurately support it or not. If you come up to me afterwards trying to correct my thinking on an example I used, then I will take that to mean that you completely missed the point and I will be irritable about that. And you know what that looks like. Does everyone know what it looks like when I get irritable? Have I ever? Okay. Yeah, we have a first-time visitor shaking their head, you know, like they know already they picked up on it. So with those two clarifications in mind, let's dive into it. Paul warns us to not get caught up in what he calls meaningless talk, controversies based on bad information, what he refers to as myths and fables. Remember those verses? He tells us to have nothing to do with foolish and stupid arguments because they only produce quarrels and that the Lord's servant is not to be quarrelsome. And there is, unfortunately, no shortage of practices and views and assertions and opinions and rumors and so on to quarrel about these days. And a lot of this, of course, is stirred up by a media that has an insatiable appetite for throwing gasoline on controversies, of which Christians often get swept up into. Whenever we engage in a quarrel or controversy, it is inevitable that something reckless is going to be said. Something unfounded, or crazy, or arrogant, even defiant, something uncharitable, hurtful. Reckless words fly. Whatever the controversy is, COVID-19, Black Lives Matter, protests, the real reasons for the coin shortage, effectiveness of masks, hidden agendas of the government, COVID-19 vaccinations, the governor, the president, the government tracking us, whatever the controversy is, whatever quarrel we have chosen to walk into, let us not be fools. Let us not say foolish things. Again, this isn't about the controversies themselves. It is about the problem of us embarrassing ourselves by the way that we handle them, how we talk about them, the degree of importance we ascribe to them, the hard stands we take on things we know we do not know that much about, but think we do. The bad information we believe and pass on. How we come across to non-Christians in all of this. Who we belittle, who we accuse, who we assume to know the motives of, and how we spout off about all of that. To sum it up, this is a warning against foolishness. This is a call for wisdom, humility, to think before you speak, to think before you post. It is about who we represent and the obligation we have to represent Him with not just godly lives, but with reasonable, rational, sound minds guided by wisdom from above, rather than the crazy stuff being belched up from late-night radio shows, shady websites, and ill-founded rumors floating around. Given the wide audience that reads our Facebook posts, and the fact that there is a written record of that post that anybody can snatch and then make permanent, it would seem that this would be the one place where we would want to be the most careful. But yet it tends to be the place where we are the most reckless. Though many posts are quite harmless, like pictures of grandkids and gardens and hummingbirds and posts pertaining to celebrating birthdays and the like, a lot of what goes on Facebook strikes me as an open toilet that the whole community pees and poops in but is never flushed. We assert our opinions on disputable matters and controversies as though they are established facts, with no consideration that we could be wrong. We quickly pass on things without checking to see if they are even true, what the sources are, what the short-term and long-term ramifications might be by sharing that misinformation. We advance ourselves as experts. I know what I am talking about, and we don't. On many of these subjects, nobody's an expert. Nobody knows. All we have are speculations, views we want to believe, but that doesn't stop us from thinking that everybody wants to hear us on that subject and take what we say as gospel. Not just the content, but the very tone is often quarrel inviting, giving the impression that only an idiot would disagree. Equally troublesome is that we are quick to judge the motives of others, like our civil leaders, whenever we find ourselves at odds with something they said or did. We think nothing of condemning them openly, publicly, on social media. I mean, that's what Americans do. This is democracy, right? Along that line, we often come across as insulting, angry, sarcastic, quarrelsome. What is often lacking is charity, humility, and an earnest desire for the actual facts, consideration for other viewpoints, charity toward others. First, the scriptures warn against such recklessness with our speech. Talk about that more in a minute. And secondly, this diarrhea from our mouths and from our computers is damaging our testimony as God's people. Some of the contentious, crazy things they hear us say or read from us is a big turnoff, along with the way that we say it. All the views we are spouting off about how the government is going to shut down all the churches for good, and take away our guns, and turn us into a cashless society so as to set things up for the reign of the Antichrist, and to how they are tracking us on our cell phones and recording our conversations and keeping records of who we interact with and where we go, as though, really, are our lives that interesting? You know, and how they have a cure for COVID-19, but they aren't giving it to us. And the hidden agenda behind the mandates to wear masks. There's always a hidden agenda behind everything. And how we talk about God telling us to do this and God telling us to do that, as though we hear voices in our heads and have direct communication with Him. And what we say, you know, about our gun rights and how we are prepared to kill anyone threatening our property. Anyone stealing cabbage from my garden can expect to be buried there the same day. All this nutty stuff of comparing the wearing of masks to Jews being ordered to wear yellow stars. Do I need to go on? I mean, the world observes all of this, rolls their eyes and walk away saying, those Christians are bat crap crazy. I sometimes think movies like The Matrix shape our worldview more than the scriptures do. This is the point in the sermon where you look at the cartoon on the back of your handout. So please, the issue today isn't about any of those particular views or assertions or claims or those examples, as eager as I would be to make them the issue. The issue is how we talk about these sorts of things, how we promote them, the degree of importance we ascribe to them, and whether we should even share our views about them at all in the first place, or at least think about who we share them with. This is about wisdom, Humility. Think. Think before you speak. Think before you post. Even the ranting and raving about the Black Lives Matter protests. Yes, the violence and the vandalism needs to stop. Certain cities where this is still going on. And no, we cannot let anarchy reign. But in all of that, think about this for a moment. Would outsiders to the faith pick up from us any sympathy for blacks who have been unfairly victimized over the years? Anything? Anything at all? Or is it just, we're just, you know, we just vent biting sarcasm and anger about what's going on? Is that, you know, would outsiders, based on what we say and don't say, even think that we care about blacks? Any blacks? This is just one of many examples. What are we conveying? What is the larger message the world is picking up from us? Again, not just Facebook, but all the ways that we communicate our views and thoughts. Back in the day when crowds met in front of the abortion clinic, we had a guy in our midst, a faithful Christian, faithful defender of life, a very likable and agreeable guy, who got caught up in some kooky belief that the trails of smoke that we see in the sky from jets are mind-altering chemicals polluting our air supply so as to dumb down the population, making us compliant to government control. He was dead serious. And this was 30 years ago, and occasionally I hear that craziness is still being circulated. Those crowds at the clinic drew in all kinds of different people, including no small number of non-Christians who came out to counter our efforts. Now, we expected them to ridicule our stand for life. That was a worthy thing to be ridiculed for. But as they mingled inside our ranks, they picked up all sorts of nutty things to mock us about, like chemtrails from jets and fears of the Illuminati and demons being released from rock music and how the Holocaust never really took place and how Janet Reno was using her powers to build concentration camps to round up all the Christians and lock them into. Crazy stuff that made all the other people roll their eyes and conclude, Christians are just downright nuts. They have lost their freaking minds. These are some of the things Christians should not have been ridiculed for. Things that if they were believed would have been best kept unspoken rather than spouted off openly. I was always screaming inside. Can you still hear me, the jet? Be careful of the chemtrails. Whenever I'd hear this stuff down there, I was always screaming inside, you know, if you want to believe that, fine, just don't let anyone know that you believe it. Let us be ridiculed for believing the miracles in the Bible and the resurrection of Jesus and the hope of the coming kingdom of God and that the Bible is divine truth. These are worthy convictions to hold dear and be made fun of, but not this other stuff. Meaningless talk that only stirs up quarrels. Unfortunately, many Christians seem to be drawn to the wild and the bizarre and the sensational, like bugs to a porch light. And then it becomes for them an obsession. There was no shortage of craziness 30 years ago, and there's no shortage of it today. Another example. Recently, we had a visitor come into the church who wanted some time alone to pray. Afterwards, Josh and I engaged her. She claimed to be a believer, but was upset in tears because her neighbors were always shunning her. We felt sorry for her, but then it became all too clear what was going on. She told us that the 5-mile-long tunnel that they are boring out under the city right now, you know, 200 feet down, is going to be used for satanic rituals, for sacrificing children, and that no one knows where Mike Pence is. It's a big mystery. The one in the White House is a fake, a clone, one of many clones in our government. And for probably an hour, we heard about all sorts of crazy conspiracies and cover-ups and hidden agendas of the government. And it didn't matter what Josh and I said to counter such nonsense, her mind was made up. And she was so worked up about all of this stuff. And so most of our efforts were getting her to lay that burden down before the Lord, even if all that is true. I mean, we kind of conceded. Let's just say that it's true. You know, it's not your load to bear. And we repeated this several times, but it just bounced off of her. She grieved that her neighbors did not want to be friendly to her, did not want to be around her. She grieved that her husband wasn't a believer. She could not connect the obvious dots. So obvious. She just didn't see it. In both of these situations, the guy at the clinic and this recent visitor, unbelievers, thought they were loons. They are a picture of what comes to mind when I hear what so-called normal Christians are saying to one another and what they're posting on Facebook. It might not be as wild and extreme, but a lot of it borderlines on the crazy nonetheless. And it certainly seems crazy to the normal guy on the street. So, have you ever wondered if unbelievers think that you are a loon? I mean, seriously, have you ever thought about that? Have you ever stopped to reflect on some of the unconventional and strange things that you talk about or post on Facebook? Again, let them make fun of us for believing in the sacred doctrines of the faith, but only for that. Third example, there's this big empty church downtown Markle. It's all run down and falling apart. For those who may not know that Markle's my town, it's where I live. It's a big eyesore. 10 or 15 years ago, a woman came in, she bought it, telling the community that God told her to buy it. She heard from him because revival is coming to Markle, and it will start there in that building. Well, it just sits there, year after year, getting uglier and uglier. And last I heard, she moved away and she just left it. And whenever it is mentioned among the town folk, they just chuckle about this crazy woman who heard from God. Now, I do not want to suggest that people can't hear from God or don't hear from him. But I would say to you that you better not tell others that you have unless you are 100% sure. And I would think that being 100% sure would be more than just having a thought enter into one's mind. I mean, for me, it would need to be a voice from heaven, audible, thunderous with smoke and lightning, and angels appearing all around. Anything less than that, and I'd probably have doubts. Apart from that, best not to say anything to anyone. You know, treasure it in your own mind if you want, but they're dropping those chemicals on us again. They know the subject today, and they're purposely coming to sabotage it. Christians run their mouths all the time about all sorts of things, you know, about this sort of thing to unbelievers in particular. God told me this. God told me that. I mean, they're saying this to non-Christians. God told me to do this. God told me to do that. I mean, does this really appeal to non-believers? Are they not saying to themselves, quick, get the guys in the white jackets. They're needed. You and I have been conditioned, rightly so, that for the sake of attracting unbelievers, we are to live godly lives. Lives bearing the fruit of kindness and generosity and righteousness and integrity and so forth. The world is repulsed, rightly so, by Christians who live compromised lifestyles, who drag the name of Christ through the mud because of their sin and hypocrisy. We have heard numerous sermons on this through the years. But equally true is that for the sake of attracting unbelievers to the gospel, we are to present ourselves as reasonable, rational, level-headed, responsible thinkers who possess a sound mind. The world is just as repulsed, and rightly so, by Christians who run their mouths about things they know nothing about and bombard everyone with ill-founded opinions and assertions based on bad information and claims to have a direct pipeline to God, not to mention conspiracies and stories of cover-ups that would rival episodes on the Twilight Zone. If you think that there is a cure for COVID-19 that they are purposely keeping from us, then why do you find it so hard to believe that Mike Pence has been kidnapped and the guy in Washington is a clone? Why is one nutty conspiracy true and not the other? If you believe that wearing a mask is part of a larger plan to see how far we are willing to go so as to get us ready for complete government control of our personal lives, then tell me why the smoke from jets aren't releasing mind-altering chemicals to make us compliant. Why is some conspiracies legitimate and others not? I mean, I'd love to know. The Bible warns us against heresies. We know that. The Bible also warns us against aberrant and false teachings. We've been taught that. And the Bible also warns in Hebrews 13 against, quote, strange teachings. To not be carried away by them. Strange teachings. They're not necessarily heretical. They don't really injure the gospel directly in any way. They're just weird and nutty. But they do trigger unnecessary quarrels and can prove to be not only a big distraction, but also a big turnoff for unbelievers. And this is why we are exhorted to not get caught up in them. 1 Corinthians 14 helps illustrate why God is concerned about this. The subject is speaking in tongues. Paul is giving the church at Corinth guidance on how to properly understand this gift and the do's and don'ts of using it. And so he provides some common sense warnings, of which 23, verse 23 is a main one. He writes, So if the whole church comes together and speaks in tongues, and some unbelievers come in, will they not say that you have lost your minds? Well, first, Paul does not condemn speaking in tongues. His solution isn't to tell the church to stop doing it. He actually provides them lots of liberty in the practice of that. But he is concerned that the exercise of that gift will become self-indulgent, become too much of a focus, and more importantly, that it will scare away non-believers. The picture of everyone in the church speaking in tongues all at once would be a shocking and disturbing thing for someone to walk into. What the heck is going on? Get me out of here. And so, yes, Paul is concerned about the impression the church makes on outsiders. This verse clearly teaches that. And so he lays down some rules. The principles in that section there obviously have a wider application. As Christians, you and I have freedom to do certain things and even believe certain things if we want to on these secondary issues and disputable matters. But there are, of course, limits. We cannot become obsessed with them. They have to keep low, very low on that priority list. We cannot use our freedoms and those sorts of things in a reckless way. And we have to be careful that we do not scare away non-Christians on what we say or post on Facebook and all the rest. God really does not want the world to think that we have lost our minds. He's concerned about that. Elsewhere in chapter 14, Paul exhorts the Corinthians to be adults in their thinking. To think like grown-ups, people who are mature, reasonable, seasoned, experienced, of sound mind, solid in their thinking. So again, we are representatives of Christ. How we act reflects on Him. What we say reflects on Him. And when we say things that are far out there, well, that reflects on Him as well. And this is exasperated when those far out there opinions are asserted as established facts. And more so yet when asserted with a tone of arrogance and defiance. But again, this problem goes well beyond nutty ideas, as I mentioned earlier. It's much broader than that. We quickly pass on things without checking to see if they're even true, what the sources are, what the short-term, long-term ramifications might be of passing on that lie or misinformation. We advance ourselves as experts in all sorts of things when we're not. All we have are speculations, views we want to believe and support. Equally troublesome, we're quick to judge the motives of others. Again, like our civil leaders, whenever we find ourselves disagreeing with something that they said or did, you know, the Bible calls on us to respect and honor the very people that we openly condemn before the whole world. This is troublesome. And along this line, we often come across, we really do, as insulting and angry and sarcastic. And those with different views would be idiots. Again, what's lacking is humility, charity, oftentimes. Meaningless talk across the board on so many things only ignites unnecessary quarrels, and in the end, it exposes the foolishness of our depraved hearts. So let us think biblically. Let us have our minds transformed. Let us be filled with wisdom. Let us think before we speak. Remember who you represent. Filter, then filter again. Colossians 4:5, be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Let your words always be full of grace, seasoned with salt. Ephesians 4:29, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. And these proverbs, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. 15:28. This one, he who guards his lips guards his life, but he who speaks rashly will come to ruin. 13:3. When words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. 10:19. A man of understanding uses words with restraint, and a man of knowledge uses words with restraint, and a man of understanding is even-tempered. 17:27. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. 12:18. A prudent man is careful with knowledge, but the heart of fools blurt out folly. 12:23. Now, we all know the history, talked about this before, of how the early Christians suffered intense persecution, especially during the second and third centuries. You know the stories. Romans found Christians irritable for several reasons. A big reason, of course, was their refusal to worship the image of the emperor. The Romans interpreted the stubbornness as an act of treason. Indeed, everyone in the community thought it was just downright unpatriotic for them not to do that. Christians were also irritating because they would not attend public performances at the stadium, the bloody gladiator games, and criminals being thrown to the lions, and so forth. Even events that were not necessarily objectionable, like the theater and sports and so on, were avoided by Christians due to the fact that they were opened up with prayers to a Roman deity or be dedicated to a pagan deity. And this uninvolvement was seen as kind of like a shunning, you know. Why aren't Christians more involved in these sorts of things? And they were irritated as a result. And then there were the rumors. You know, the talk of loving one another suggested the church assemblies were nothing but wild orgies. And the Lord's Supper service, with this emphasis on the blood and body of Christ, was construed to be cannibalism. And on it goes. Persecution at the hands of the emperor was bad enough, but the second and third century Christians suffered it on other levels as well, from neighbors and the community at large. But all of these were noble things to suffer for, the right sort of stuff to be made fun of. And if any of them, and if any of that irritated others, well, it's just how it had to be. Today, Christians are irritating for all sorts of reasons. Some good reasons. We condemn abortion. We oppose gay marriage. We believe the LGBTQ plus movement is a major threat to our society and children. We aren't pluralistic. Jesus is the only way, period. No other plan to salvation, and so on. These sorts of things are worth standing for. And if we are hated and ridiculed for them, then so be it. But then we have all this other excessive baggage that weighs us down unnecessarily. Cumbersome distractions that for some reason we feel compelled to feed and coddle and even push onto others. Pet views on controversies and meaningless talk and futile arguments that only breed quarrels and turn others off. Perhaps this would be telling, you know, take a moment to think about this. What do you read the most? What do you listen to the most? Watch the most? What is feeding your mind? Conservative talk show hosts or the Bible? Friends' websites or the Bible? YouTube conspiracy videos or the Bible? Late night radio or the Bible? And so I'll repeat it again, you know. Let's just say that all this paranoia and craziness is true. We are still obligated to represent Christ. Don't turn people away from the faith unnecessarily because you're preoccupied with what is to them strange ideas that have nothing to do whatsoever with Jesus. Remember who you represent. Filter, then filter again. Is it wholesome? Is it helpful? Is it true? Is it wholesome? Is it helpful? Is it true? Gary, tell that train to be quiet. When an outsider, we know, I'm getting ready to wind up here, sees you or me, what do you think comes to mind? When an outsider sees you, that knows you, what do you think comes to their mind? What would you want to come to their mind? What are you known for? I would hope that the first thing, the most vivid and striking thing, would be, there is a Christian. Whether I agree with him or not, right or wrong, he is a Christian and one who represents the faith quite well. You know, not all this other stuff, but that's how they would know us. And may that be so for each of us. Amen? Amen. Josh?
bringing that good and convicting, albeit difficult, word to us this morning.